It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here to say goodbye to Windows 7. Hello to Kredge, their name for the new version of Edge. We'll talk about Xbox. We'll talk about the NSA and that crypto flaw. There's a lot to come. Windows Weekly, just around the corner. Windows Weekly is brought to you from the TWIT LastPass Studios, securing every access point in your company. Doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure. Check out LastPass.com/TWIT to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 655, recorded Wednesday, January 15th, 2020. There's a seeker born every minute. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Guru. How do you find the answer to customer questions? Who are your top 10 competitors? What's the Wi-Fi password? Was it hard to answer those questions? Guru thinks it should be easy to get the knowledge you need. They design Guru to be your single source of truth. Try it free today at getguru.com/windows. And by CashFly. Give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with the CashFly CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. I'm back. Mary Jo Foley's here. Paul Thurrott is here. The whole gang is assembled. Thank you to Micah Sargent for filling in last week.
Mm-hmm.
While I was at the show formerly known as the Consumer
Gallivanting.
Show. Gallivanting about hither and thither. We did 30,
you're still alive.
38 segments.
Oh.
Wow. And really, we did more, but some of them were omnibused into one.
Right.
So sillily, when we wrote up the treatment, said, oh, we'll do 10 segments a day, 40 segments. Wow. We did. I'm saying, what?
Wow.
What? Almost. Anyway. So, but that was a lot of fun. You guys don't go, do you?
No.
I go. Happily. I do go, but not every year. Every
Microsoft
3 years.
So, but there were a lot of PCs. Dell showed its new XPS 13.
Yeah, that's the one thing I would go for is the PCs.
Yeah.
HP had some great stuff. In fact, Mike said hi to say hi to you. Paul.
Nice.
Yeah, and Mary Jo.
Nice. Mike Nash, yep.
Mike Nash. Yeah, they showed us. They have some interesting things. They have a super widescreen monitor with two HDMI ports, so you could have two PCs or a Mac and a PC hooked up and switch back and forth. It even lets you copy and paste between the screens. It's really cool. Yeah. Or have one big wide screen. You could have Notepad running on two different machines, Mary Jo.
What? You're blowing my mind right now.
Oh, my God. And, I saw the new X360s. They're very pretty.
Yep.
You saw the Dragonfly, right?
I did. And that's the one that Mike said, we thought Mary Jo would love this one.
I honestly
thought she was going to prefer that to the Surface laptop.
Why didn't you like it?
I didn't like the material it's made out of, even though it makes it lighter and portable. I felt like it felt kind of plasticky.
Yeah.
We talked about this plasticky. Before, but you're crazy.
You're nuts.
I also,
you're crazy,
you knew
lady.
Also, they cut it down so much. In the ratio that I think it's less lappable than it should be.
I will say they have reached the limits on the size, right? Because I know this is the trend, but I think this is as small as I told them when I went and met with them in December, I guess. And I said, look, I love this thing, but please make a 14-inch version just so it'll be a little bigger.
Mary Jo, get the 13 or the 15-inch Surface laptop?
13.
Okay.
Yep.
I think you made the right choice. I think that Surface laptop is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Me too. It's a beautiful machine.
I'm very happy with it.
Yeah. It's funny because HP did make the thinnest machines for a long time, and their Spectres are getting thicker.
I know.
Better battery life, I guess, and there's more stuff in it. But
well, see, actually, that's one of the cool things about that Dragonfly. You can choose it with two different battery sizes.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
So if you really care about the weight, you can get a version that's just a hair over 2 pounds.
That's
crazy.
A nice idea. I like that.
That is.
You don't really see that a lot.
Choice
you don't really see that ever.
No.
Yeah.
Samsung showed off some new laptops, including a new beautiful bright red $1,000 Chromebook.
Yeah.
Yep, we're all looking for one of those.
I know. I was like, okay, who's that for?
I think people who write Chromebook blogs.
Yeah, it's for Kevin TOEFL specifically.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. TOEFL book. Who else would want such a thing?
No, I think it's executives, honestly. Yeah. I think you give the boss that. You know, first line workers get a service and the top of the heap, the C-level guy gets the...
Yeah, but who wants a Chromebook? Like, I feel like I've been very accommodating to alternate platforms. I've really given Chrome OS a lot of coverage. And I got to say, the more I use it, the more limiting it feels. Like, I really expected it to burst through some ceiling and just become a really good mainstream alternative to Windows or the Mac or whatever. And I just don't feel like it's there.
You're not alone. In fact, I just saw an article, I can't remember where, was it The Verge, about how the Chromebook has kind of run out of steam.
Stalled, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that might have been Android Police or...
Maybe, yeah. Somebody.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I'm not sure I agree. Yeah, Android Police, you're right. I'm not sure I agree with that. It was David Ruddick.
Here's how you can back up the premise. Because when I wrote up the $1,000 Chromebook thing, I mentioned that Chromebook sales had stagnated. And somebody kind of called me on that. And they said, last I heard, this was the only thing growing in the PC industry. And if you look it up, Chromebook usage share has been flat for 2 years straight. Like it's a line at the very bottom of the screen. It's 0.36 or some tiny percentage.
Yeah, but unless you like separate out education
but we're talking about, you know, mainstream usage share, right? So yeah. I think it has stalled. Mm. I think that's a fair assessment.
Plus, what have they done to Chrome OS? Like, have they been continuously updating it major things?
Yeah, they keep updating Chrome.
Yeah.
Remember, too, that they update Chrome. They update Chrome OS features separately. They also added Android app support and Linux app support. Yeah. And but those things should have put it over the top. And it's weird how much of a mess it is.
I think that was Ruddick's point, was that the Android apps just aren't a great experience on a Chromebook. Mm. And so,
because Android apps are by and large are terrible in the tablet form factor.
Yeah. Mm. You know, it's what killed Android tablets.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
it's weird. I can't explain it, but there's a huge gap between an iPad and an Android tablet.
AMD was a big presence at CES, announced their 64 core Threadripper.
Did you see that they released a fake picture of the Xbox?
That was a little different. Yeah, you probably talked about that last week. They made up a render, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And not Microsoft a good idea. Wasn't too happy, I think.
Yeah, they were like, sure. That's not what it looks like, and those ports are inaccurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a weird thing to do.
Yeah, that was weird.
That was some intern. I think scrambled.
Some intern.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably a marketing person. I literally think somebody Googled it and just grabbed the first image.
Yeah, maybe.
And it was some kid drew a picture of what they thought it might look like.
That's probably what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you got to be careful. You're giving a CES keynote. You can't just throw stuff up on the screen.
Amateur.
There was a lot of PC stuff. I mean, there's more TV stuff. There's more car stuff. There's more Internet of Things stuff. But there was a lot of PC
stuff. There was some fun stuff. I thought that was kind of some interesting.
It's funny because companies like Dell don't have big booths. Samsung has a massive booth, but the computers, the laptops are often a little
side. So if you saw Mike Nash, you saw him at Showstoppers or Pepcom or one of those things, right? Yeah. So I would have seen him if I had gone. I would have seen him there. They also, those guys, Dell and HP and Lenovo.
Dell was in a restaurant. Acer. Dell was in Sugar
But they also
cane.
Have, but they also have private rooms in hotels. Right. So you can go, you know, as press, you can go and see them there. Microsoft does too. You can go. Yeah. Microsoft is in the bottom of the, I don't know if it's the Venetian or whatever.
Yeah, Venetian. Yeah.
Wherever they are.
But I want booths. We were there to, you know, I wasn't going to go shoot a conversation in a hotel room. That just
but for people,
for
so
briefings,
obviously,
that's fine.
Because you're doing
obviously.
A lot of video, I think the background stuff is part of the appeal of it.
Right.
For people like me, if I could avoid that whole show.
Yeah, you're getting the information.
That's ideal.
And that's the truth of CES. You don't need to go. You get the information better.
Yeah.
In briefings, in watching other people.
Depends.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I had fun. It's a geeky kind of toy store. Yesterday, the end of the line for Windows 7.
It's endings and new beginnings.
Yep.
It's actually a lucky thing that they had that last patch Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, why? But wait, they didn't fix the crypto bug on Windows 7. Oh, wait. Well, what are they going
to
do?
It's almost like they invented a zero day just to prevent, you know, to get people to upgrade, you know, on day one or something. I hope that. So I
know very little about this, but didn't Windows 7 not need that patch?
All versions of Windows needed that patch.
I saw Windows 10, Windows Server 2016, and 2019, and that was it.
It was Encrypt 32 DLL, which is in all versions of Windows. It's what's used to sign certificates, and the threat, one of the threats is that you could forge a certificate. So you could say, I just wrote Microsoft Word. Here, have a copy. And it could be signed.
I need to forge a certificate for my app.
exactly. So this was an important patch. In fact, it was the NSA that discovered it.
Yeah.
I hope they told Microsoft months ago.
Oh, yeah, of course. They're probably screwing around in that back door that everyone knows they have. And
I learned a new term called NOBUS. And this is a NOBUS, N-O-B-U-S. It's an acronym or a kind of a, not an acronym, it's a squishonym that the NSA uses for an exploit that's so hard to take advantage of that nobody but us can use it. And they don't patch, they don't tell people about NOBUS.
Right.
Michael Hayden, the former head of the NSA, said, look, if it's going to take 4 acres of supercomputers to, you know, take advantage of this exploit, we don't bother getting it fixed. It's good for us. Because we got 4 acres of supercomputers.
Yeah, a few companies have that scale of
So there's this doctrine of NOBUS flaws. This was not a NOBUS flaw. This is a kind of a serious issue, which is patched in 10, right? But
yep.
Well, I mean, there's no excuse not to patch it in 7 if it is vulnerable. Right. And also 8.1, right? They should be patching every...
I'll have to look at the NSA bulletin, but I think that my memory is they said it would be in all versions of Windows. And because it's Crypt 32 DLL, which I think all the crypto processes, including BitLocker and certificates, use.
So when we started our day yesterday, knowing it was the last day, Windows 7 would get patches. When I heard there were a lot of rumors going around about NSA press conference and this and that, and I'm like, oh, man. Are you kidding? Like, is there going to be something? Right? Yeah. Is there going to be something where they say, okay, we're patching Windows 7 one last time, and this is why you need to upgrade, right? That was my guess of how, if that was what it was, they would have positioned it, right?
So Brian Krebs said that what happened, it was revealed to Microsoft. Microsoft fixed it. They quietly shipped fixes to the military.
Yeah.
Okay. And other high value customers and targets that manage key internet infrastructure. And then that's what kept anybody from saying anything until January 14th when it was, you know, Patch Tuesday yesterday when it was patched.
Surprise, Google did just reveal it 120 days ago like they usually do.
Google has, by the way, settled on 90 days. They said it's going to be 90 days.
90 days, sorry. Yeah.
So Crypt 32 DLL was introduced into Windows 20 years ago in NT 4.0. XP is vulnerable. Sure. 7 is vulnerable.
Wow.
Well, according to Krebs. So
it stands to reason they would patch it then, even though Windows 7 is still going to be in use.
That's what I would say, too.
Well, wait a minute now. According to the NSA, the problem exists in Windows 10 and Windows Server 2016, which was patched.
Okay. It's possible this component was updated over time, right? So that would explain why older versions don't need it.
Microsoft says no active exploitations have been seen to date. It's unclear. It's unclear. I mean...
It would be suicide for them not to have patch 7 with this. If it, right? That wouldn't even make sense.
No.
It would be like crazy because yesterday was the last patch.
It's like, bye-bye. And we left a little something for you.
Here's a little Windows 10 upgrade offer you might want to take advantage of.
No. And you know what? If they hadn't done that, and everybody knew this was the last day, don't you think there'd be this gigantic outcry?
Well, we have to kind of describe it this way because it is the last day officially, but Microsoft patched XP a couple of times. They will, of course, do it. If this was some rampant internet attack, of course they would ship a patch. So that's why I'm keeping that Windows 7 thing going. I can't wait to see the next update.
See what happens. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it must be that it only affects, because it's a flaw in the ECC, the elliptic curve crypto. So maybe those earlier versions of Windows didn't even
have that.
It's relatively new.
That's my guess. Just my uneducated guess. Left has to be. Steve Gibson.
Did you say educated?
I said uneducated.
You mean creducated?
Creducated. Nice.
We're going to drop a creducation bomb.
I'm looking at the Microsoft CVE entry, and it does not mention any other versions of Windows. They just mention the patches. Okay. But they don't say it doesn't affect. They don't say what it affects one way or the other.
It would be incredibly irresponsible to patch one version of Windows, right? I mean, that makes more
sense. Because there's still like 30% of Windows users, 25-30% using Windows 7, including some of the biggest enterprises, right? And then they don't patch it.
And it doesn't matter how you count. That's hundreds of millions of people. I mean, no matter, no matter what the number is.
They don't say explicitly it only affects these versions, but that's all they patched. And they don't imply that it affected any other versions.
Yeah.
So if you really want to know something, ask Edward Snowden.
We'll call him up.
We're going to be getting to the point where his information's a little out of date.
He's out of date now. Yeah, he's only. Yeah. I know what Putin tells
me. Like asking Wozniak for some information about like Mac internals. It's like, I don't know.
I hope it's patched. As far as we know, the free upgrade continues, right?
Yeah.
Today is the
silent, no one's talking about it, free upgrade that everyone can use.
Yeah.
today's the day that you'll see a big pop-up on your Windows 7 machine saying...
Yep, I saw it this morning.
Did you?
Beautiful.
You did?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So only on non-domain joined and machines in...
Actually, I could be... Are you sure about that?
They told me that. They said it will not appear on domain joined machines or machines in kiosk mode.
Kiosk mode, okay. I think it might appear on domain joined machines that aren't part of that extended service program. But where did I see that?
They told me no, but
Do you hear from anybody who says, I just love Windows 7, I'm not going to move to 10?
Yeah, I'm one of those people, Leo, and I got to say.
Well, you know who used to say that? Steve Gibson, and he even has bowed to the inevitable. He upgraded.
Well, so for the past 2 or 3 weeks, I've been using Windows 7, and I love it. And I have to say... This is the last version of Windows that was created before any of the mobile nonsense. Yep, yep. And it has a purity to it that I really appreciate. It reminds me of the Mac in some ways in that it's kind of a minimalist system and there's not a bunch of junk in your face, whatever.
Yep. I always said it was the best version of Windows they ever
made. Yeah. The most popular, I would say, so far. But, you know, it's irresponsible to think that you're going to run this thing over a period of time. And I understand wanting to. I completely understand.
Yeah.
Windows 7 users have not been served by any meaningful feature updates ever. You know, there was one service pack that came out in 2011 that didn't really have much in the way of features. And that was kind of the end of that. But let's face it, this NSA thing or whatever, there's going to be a zero day. There are hundreds of millions of people using this thing. It is absolutely going to be a target. And so you can do yourself a favor by using a modern browser that will help in some ways using AV, obviously. But eventually this thing is going to be exploited and it's a ticking time bomb. It's unfortunate because it still feels very modern to me.
Mm. There's also for enterprises some compliance concerns too. Like if you're running a browser that's no longer supported, like say you're not getting extended security updates, right? And somebody says, "Oh, you know, you're going to supply something for us. What version of Windows are you using?" And you say 7.
Yep.
It's like, you know.
That was the thing for people who were sticking with XP. That was when it finally, you know, they really had to change. It was when the browsers stopped updating, right? When you're not,
and that. Took 2 years, by the way, which
that
is kind of interesting.
That was the kiss of death.
So we'll see how long it lasts for 7. It's going to be based on usage. If the numbers remain
high. And also what Chrome does what Google does with Chrome.
Yeah, but I mean, because everybody's based on Chrome now, right?
Well, okay, fair enough. Actually, that's true. Yeah. Well, Firefox, we should look at Firefox too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Has Firefox
it's a big user base.
I don't know if Firefox
has said. I feel like
they
lasted the longest with XP.
Google just said till July 2021 they will support.
Well, I said at least
Chrome
until July 2021.
Until least.
Yeah, they could go up. Last time around, like I said, you know, with Windows XP, they went 2 years.
And Microsoft won't say about Credge. They it came out for Windows 7 today in final form, and they say yes, we're supporting it on Windows 7, but when you say how long, they say no comment. So.
Right.
Did they say what about Security Essentials? Because if you can get that.
Yeah, that still works.
It does.
That's interesting. So they're going to have to
do it again for how long? They're not saying.
Right.
And by the way, of course they're not saying because you don't want don't want to give any indication.
Oh, you got all the time in the world.
It will be you know, supported for a year or 2 years or whatever.
Right.
That's why they probably aren't being very explicit about this crypto problem on 7. They'd like to imply that you
need. We've got some reader comment on that now. Brian in Pittsburgh said, Windows 7 never apparently supported the ability to supply ECC parameters.
Right. That would make sense.
And that's why. Because the implication relatively is that's why new. It didn't need to be patched. Yeah.
Krebs, on the other hand, says it's, I mean, that's the thing. It's confusing to me. Brian says that this component's been part of Windows for 20 years, but you're right. If it's just the ECC thing, that's relative.
I don't remember this, but in reading that security bulletin, but Microsoft usually is very explicit when they explain which versions are affected or not. Like they will say Windows 7 and Windows 8.x are not affected, therefore they don't need that. Like they usually say that.
They omitted that.
Yeah.
Which I find intriguing.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I'll go back again and say if they did not patch this and it's vulnerable, enterprise companies are going to go after
them. They have to.
Well, it might mean that they just don't know or don't have a fix yet because it's a different problem, and maybe that's something that comes down the road.
But then you'd say that, right?
No, because once you say people will start targeting those systems.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Fair.
You've just admitted there's a problem that they can't fix yet.
True. That's true.
Yeah, I don't see them saying it only affects server 2016, server 2019,
and 19, right?
And 10.
Yeah.
And they are patching 1607 through 1909 of Windows 10.
Yeah.
Let me look at the NSA's write-up because it's a
the model of clarity.
Yeah, okay, NSA says the vulnerability affects Windows 10 and Windows Server 2016-19 as well as applications that rely on Windows for trust functionality. So they are explicitly saying it's only those two things. So that's good news.
That is good news.
Yeah.
We can count on that. Yeah.
I think the NSA is not. They wouldn't.
I don't think they'd lie, right?
Wait. Isn't that pretty much exactly their job? Spies are honest,
aren't they?
I like Paul's idea, though. If it does affect 7 and there isn't a patch for it, like you try to detract.
Bingo.
Right?
Profit.
But I'm going to go with it doesn't.
Yeah. If the NSA says it only affects those two versions, I think. It could be a Nobus.
It's just the notion of trusting the NSA on this is a little strange to me, but I'm sure it's fine.
Well, that's the weird paradox of the NSA. They are simultaneously responsible for spying on every other nation in the world and protecting us, keeping them from spying on us. And those are almost conflicting missions.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's why it's hard.
Yeah.
It's right. It seems like one of those should just be served by Homeland Security, not to get off on a completely different topic. But yeah, anyway. Okay.
Yeah.
Spies don't lie.
Never.
Ask John Le Carré. The Edge era begins today. This is very exciting.
Yeah.
Is Edge done? Is it cooked? Are we in beta still or are we now? Nope.
Well, it's
technically, it's, no.
Yeah, it's not done, right? We know there are major things that are not in there yet, like extension syncing is the big one.
Extension
they've
syncing.
Reached some artificial date and have decided that it's done. I don't know.
Bookmarks sync, though, right?
Bookmarks, yep, settings, some settings.
That could be intentional. My Brave doesn't sync extensions. I kind of like that because I use different extensions in different machines.
They are working on it, right? And of course, it works in Chrome and Chromium. So
yeah, Chrome does it. Firefox does.
And you can obviously configure which parts of the system that you want it to sync. I mean, you don't have to sync extensions if you don't want to. But right.
That's one of the things I really like. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I review a lot of laptops. You bring up a laptop, you install your browser. Yeah.
Okay, we're unusual.
You sign into your account, and bing, 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 all your extensions pop up.
I do
it's
like
wonderful.
That. I agree.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
I know.
But that's
it. Really, it's part of what makes it much easier to get up
IT
and running.
IT departments and Paul Theroux. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most people.
But
have
as of today, it's considered stable channel for all the platforms. So Windows 7, 8X. 10 and Mac OS, all of them.
Wow. Does it get pushed out to all versions of Windows now?
It will. I think is the way to put it.
Sort of, right?
Yeah, right.
So today it's for seekers. So if you want to go get it today, you have to go to Microsoft.com/Edge and download it yourself.
By the way, a little pet peeve because I hate that term. Microsoft has used the term seekers to describe people who go to Windows Update. Right. So when I hear seekers, I think, oh, you mean if I manually check Windows Update, I'm going to get this Windows Update. No, you're not.
Nope,
you have to go to a website. So I don't like them using that term because I think the act of browsing the web and the act of checking for updates are two very, very different things.
True.
But anyway.
That's fair.
Okay, yeah, yes.
That's,
you have to go
that's a fair it. Criticism. I didn't think of it at the time when they said it. But yeah, so today you have to be, I guess I would say an edge seeker. Right.
Oh boy.
And go get it. It downloads really fast. I got it like in a few seconds. Yeah. It was like boom, there it is. And if you already are running the Canary dev or beta channel, it doesn't overwrite that. So you still have the beta or dev or Canary version alongside the final.
By the way, I think that's the most important point, right? For people listening to this, because a lot of you folks are, I'm sure, like we are. And that's by design, of course, and that works. That's how Chrome and Chromium works. I mean, you can install different channels side by side. It is on purpose. It's a little confusing because we only had these pre-release channels before. So I think a lot of people sort of thought, well, I'm running the beta, I should obviously get the final shipping version now. And no, you get another application. So when you sign in and sync, you're going to get all your stuff except for your extensions. So you'll have to manually reinstall those, but it's up to you at that point if you want to delete the beta, or it will keep getting updated, of course. I mean, you can maintain all four channels if you wanted to on the same PC.
I think we had a message. I seem to remember a message from the Fire Sign Theater. All right. I may be wrong.
There's a seeker born every minute.
There's a seeker born every
minute. We're all seekers in our own way, aren't we?
Aren't we? We are.
Seekers of knowledge, seekers of truth.
Seekers of IPAs.
Well, all right, let's not get crazy.
So then today's the seeker thing. Go out and get it, whether you're a business user, consumer, education. But then what's going to start happening in a few weeks is Microsoft's going to get ready to push it to Windows Update for people on Home and Pro only, I believe.
Individuals, in other words, not net, right. Or non-managed Individual. Users.
So. Non-managed users, as they call it, right? So they're starting out with an insider testing in the release preview ring. They're going to test it there first, then start delivering it via Windows Update to people who they think have the most optimal configurations to have it successfully implement, whatever that means, right?
Oh, boy.
I know, just like Windows. And then they'll extend that over time. So originally when they talked about using Windows Update, they were a bit unclear, I have to say, about how and if business users would get it. And even today's statement in their blog post, it says, in addition to managed devices, Enterprise Education and Workstation Pro Edition devices will not be automatically updated at this time.
Right.
I asked them, at this time, so... at some time, and there was just no answer to that. So
I think this is tied to, because you and I went back and forth earlier today about what is this, you know, how is this going to go? Because the language is a little vague.
Wonky.
There was a comment about how, and we knew this was coming, but some future version of Windows 10 will include this browser as the default.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
So you could make the argument that at this time refers to the fact that at some point, you as a business are going to upgrade to a version of Windows 10 where this is the browser.
That's true.
And it doesn't matter if you're on whatever, you know, long term or not. At some point that will happen. And that maybe that is the time.
That could be. You're right. And I'm guessing it will not be 20H1/2004 because that's too soon, right, for that to happen.
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree.
So will they push?
They just said,
will they push
they said
the
someday
old edge
the
off?
Image will get it.
They'll push it off your machine and you'll have the Chromium version.
So I don't know if that will ever happen. The way it's working today is they're actually just hiding it. And the rationale for that is, you know, and this is was always the issue with IE back in the day, is that it's an OS component as well. And app in this case, store apps rely on it to render themselves in many cases. Yeah. And so even though there's a new version of Edge, they have to maintain that old version for app compatibility purposes. And so it's still there. And I have a tip later about how if you want to run them side by side as an individual, for some reason you might prefer the old version or you want both or whatever, you could enable that. But for most people, you won't know it's there.
Right.
Like the NSA.
It's hidden, right? Yeah,
like but it's NSA. In there. You know it's in there.
Right. They even admit it's there. It's just they hide it so that it won't be as confusing to normal people. So when you get it, you see it as one edge. You don't see like, oh, there's this and there's that. But, you know, they try to make it look cleaner for people, but they have to keep it there for now, at least.
This will be the last time I do this, but I am using Windows 7 today. So I can't check this, but I know in previous versions of Windows, you could go into Windows features and you could uninstall Internet Explorer. And it would keep those back end components, you know, because again, Justice Department, antitrust, whatever. But I think that you can do the same in Windows 10, right? I think if you want to, you can uninstall the old Edge. I think maybe it's just Internet Explorer. Maybe I'm.
Yeah, I don't know if you can because I was trying to uninstall.
Yeah,
that
as
on
I
my
say that now, I'm not actually.
PC.
No, maybe it's just IE that you can remove. Yeah,
yeah.
Sorry.
I think it's just IE. I think so.
Okay. Yep. Sorry.
But yeah, so that's what's going to happen. There's a blocker toolkit if you're on Home and Pro and you're, you know, say you have work machines on Home and Pro that may not be domain joined or managed for some reason, your IT department or you as a administrator on your own PC can go get the blocker toolkit to block it if you don't want the new Edge.
Why wouldn't
eventually
you?
The old Edge will just be a bad memory.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know. Why wouldn't you? Right. I agree. I guess if you haven't tested everything with it, right?
No, there are always people who like that things, you know. So I think it's hard to understand in this case in some ways, but there are certain browser features that are not available. I will say, as a PDF reader, the old Edge is way better than a new Edge.
Well, that's
something I run into all the time. Yeah. For example, it doesn't have like the table of contents feature that you get in the old Edge isn't there and some other stuff, but it's you know, it's okay. I think there are, like reading list integration, there's, some of the tab management features, you know, there are just certain features that may or may not ever show up in the new Edge. And if people are heavily using those features, they may just prefer them for whatever reason.
Good reason to keep it. If you needs it.
Don't get too used to it because it's going away.
It's going away.
You know, it was an interesting point that they made in their blog post today. And I don't know if they've said this before, but I was kind of surprised by it. They said the new Edge is 2 times faster than the current Edge.
Wow. 2 times.
I know. I was like, where'd that number come from?
That's amazing.
Right?
How much,
that was
how's
Belfiore's
the battery life?
Blog post.
Did they talk about
how's
the battery
life? Life, right? Yeah.
Because that was always the big selling point, right?
Yeah.
The old
I don't think they talked about compatibility though, which was, or maybe they didn't. I just glossed over that, but that for me was the main reason that they did the new Edge was that developers weren't testing against the current Edge, and there were a lot of sites that didn't work right.
you know, from a battery life perspective, this might have an impact that's similar to the newer Intel processors, where they have to have that code inside to get rid of the vulnerabilities, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. there's a bit of a hit in that case on performance, in this case on battery life, because if it's, you know, it's based on Chromium. I mean, I think there's only so much you can do from a battery life perspective. And I'm sure PC makers that were using browser-based benchmarks are going to start waving their hands and using a different metric at this point, because isn't going to be as good.
Yeah. Oh, another thing I wanted to mention, this might just be a day. Hopefully this is just a day one thing, but there are reports out there of people, because Microsoft said it's available in 90 languages. Some people who are getting it are getting it in the wrong language.
So they go to the English US, the US English page, and they get Spanish.
Right.
So habla español, folks, because
they know they're trying to fix that right now. So that's not an unknown issue.
At least it's one of the
It's funny. This past week, I ran into a website that didn't work with the new Edge, but worked with the existing Edge. That was surprising. I think it was like a New York City tourism site that my sister had sent me and asked me about something, and I loaded it in the new Edge, and I was like, why isn't the list of the stuff loading? And then I moved over,
You didn't try it in Chrome, I guess.
I tried it in Chrome. It worked in Chrome.
You did, and did it work there too?
Yeah.
Because to me, that's the more concerning thing. The primary advantage of this browser is that, is the Chrome compatibility stuff, right? And then the second one is without the Google. But we are going to run into these instances where things work fine in Chrome and don't work in Edge. And that becomes troubling, because that's the whole point of this experiment, right?
I should retry that site now that I'm using the real Edge, the final Edge.
I had an issue with our CMS one day, and I thought, oh man, here we go. But I rebooted and it was fine. I don't know what happened, but it was working fine in Chrome and it wasn't working in Edge. And I don't know, whatever, but every time something like that happens, it's like,
it works. Yeah. It works in the final of Chrome. I mean, in Edge, sorry. Credge. Yeah. It's a New York City Restaurant Week site. Very important, you know. So.
Sure.
Well, now, if it were bars, I might be upset. Let's take a little break. We have Windows 10 news, Xbox, lots more to come, but our show today is brought to you by a fine sponsor, and I wanted to mention them because it's our sponsors that keep the show on the air. Guru. Do you know about Guru? GetGuru.com/Windows. Guru it's like a knowledge base would be a good way to describe it. If you have customer service reps, you want them all working on the same page, a single source of truth. Guru's perfect for that. It can help anybody on your team or in your company find the information they need to do their job. You know, a lot of times it's hard to find. Maybe it's on paper, it's in notebooks, it's spread all over. There's one person who knows the answers. Guru makes it easy to get that knowledge into a knowledge base and have everybody have access to it as a single source of truth, exactly when they need it with their workflow. Shopify uses it in customer support, for instance. They know, people call up and they ask them questions. They put Guru, there's a Guru browser extension. They put it in the browser. It's in fact now used in 60% of all support interactions, whether it's customer service, sales, marketing, knowledge management, and more. Small companies too. I mean, Shopify is huge, right? They probably have thousands of CSRs. Small companies use it too. Boomi, B-O-O-M-I. Paul was a Boomi sales enablement leader. He made a point to load a few of their RFP responses into Guru. And bingo, he realized it helped him answer an RFP faster, because he would just take it from Guru and he could send it right out to sales engineers and reps. It brings up-to-date knowledge verified by your team's experts right into your workflow. It integrates not just with your browser, with Slack, with Salesforce, with Zendesk, Gmail, Intercom, whatever you're using. You can have Guru available at all times with the answer. Guru uses AI to make you and your team more productive. How does it do it? Well, for instance, it proactively suggests relevant information based on what you're working on. It sees your screen and says, I've got something you could use here, which helps create amazing customer experiences, helps you close deals, helps you make your customers happy, And most importantly, gives your team the confidence that they're using the most up-to-date information. We all have team members who make stuff up. Somebody asks a question, they go, and Guru eliminates that. They don't have to make stuff up. They've got it, the information at the facts at their fingertips. Prevent distractions, access and create knowledge without ever leaving your screen. Capture the knowledge of those individuals in your company who really have it up here. Get it out of the brain into Guru and make it available for everybody. If this intrigues you at all, I want you to visit getguru.com/windows. You can try it for free. GetGuru, GetGuru.com/windows. You really have to see this in action. You got to try it to really understand what a difference this makes. Everybody has somebody in the company who makes up answers. That's what you want to stop. Right? You know that. You call customer service.
You just described our podcast.
Yeah. We need Guru for Windows Weekly. No. You guys are great. But if we could extract that and put it in Guru, see? GetGuru.com/windows.
Watching someone at a bank I worked at many years ago do exactly that, and I'm just standing next to her looking at her like, what are you doing? Like, I couldn't, to a customer. You know,
because they don't want to say, I don't know.
I know. That's a huge human flaw.
I remember standing in computer stores. Remember in those days you could actually go to a store and buy a computer?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And listening to guys, you know, talking to customers, saying the most... you all had that experience, right?
Yep. It's awful seeing stuff. That happen.
Yeah. I actually interrupted a guy in a Best Buy once because he was telling somebody something about Windows 8, and I was like, "No, so I don't work here, but this guy doesn't know what he's talking
about. Excuse me, I'm Mary Jo Foley. Perhaps you've heard of me.
Yeah, right. Here's my card.
I did. Well, I never play that card, but the guy
Foley
goes, "Who are you, lady?
Services.
Yeah, the guy is like, "Who are you, lady? And I'm like, "Do you have a browser open? Okay, type in all about Microsoft.
Nice. Nice. Well done.
Oh, my God.
Well done.
He goes, okay, fine.
Fine. That's who needs Guru right there in a nutshell. Windows 10. You're already talking about late 2020. We just got here.
We're moving. The train is rolling.
Holy cow.
Can't hold back for the people that are kind of hanging on to the version that's coming out 3 months from now. We got to start talking about...
Christmas. What's it going to be like?
Christmas.
Chris Cappicella going to be telling us in a year?
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
It's not much.
But the problem is, now when you're testing features and the fast ring, you don't really know what you're testing anymore, right? Yeah. Like, it might be in the next version. It might not. Right? So, yeah.
I don't
it's
know.
It's a little more complicated
I
now.
I guess if the fast ring were somehow something that could be in the next version or the one after that, and they tied it to that major minor thing, it could almost make sense because, you know, you could push stuff off to the... But, of course, the major one that's coming out this year, if that's how they're going to do it, is in the can.
It is.
So that can't be the schedule. So I don't...
I know.
I don't. So I find myself so frustrated.
I can't remember if I told you this, Paul, or not, but... I think the reason they're doing this now, for one reason, it's because they don't want us calling them on things when they don't deliver it, right? That's one, right? So, but I think the real and bigger reason is the way they build Windows now in conjunction with the Azure team is they have that semester schedule, right? So they build a bunch of stuff in the first half of the year, and they build a bunch of stuff in the second half of the year. And they're not really sure when the Windows team will take that and put it in something commercially. That's my guess why they are doing this.
But the issue I'm, by the way, I'm sure you're right. I'm not disagreeing with you. I guess what I'm, my issue with this is there are things that are kind of fundamental, a core to the underlying part of the operating system that should be part of that Azure schedule. Those things should also be pretty clear about what isn't going to happen. The stuff that's iffy is the surface level stuff. It's the UX stuff. And that's a completely different team. And it's...
Yeah. Right.
We've had this conversation before. There's no reason they couldn't communicate features like, hey, look, we're working on this thing. It may or may not be in the next version. Let's see what happens. You know, the problem isn't us calling or me or whoever calling them on something. It's that they've stood up on a stage and said, we will do this in this version of Windows. And we're still waiting on sets. Or, you know, and then this I know it's not coming. I'm just saying that's why we call them on it. It's because they're so explicit about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So I guess being vague, they think, okay, remember the old under promise over deliver. I hate using that mantra because of where it came from, but it kind of.
Yeah, but they didn't test anything. That the fact then you wouldn't get anything. You know, these guys are putting out a build every week.
Right.
It's not that you can't do both.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's what they're doing.
They're doing it right. Exactly.
I would love to. They've talked about their methodology, right? About how they do the builds and who, what teams are doing what.
Sort of.
I'd love to see.
I enjoy that you think there's a methodology.
there has to be.
I mean, obviously, there's engineering that's occurring. It seems so spastic.
It's kind of an interesting.
I know.
Obviously, engineering is occurring.
I mean, it's a byproduct.
Things are being done.
Nonsense is there. Oh, I hope so. I mean, it is, you know, the most used operating system in the world.
Yeah. By the way, I went on this extended rant. I didn't mean to. We talked at length on that little rant thing last week.
Yeah, I heard
about
it. There were quite a few.
I didn't mean to go on that long, but
come back, Leo.
You just highlighted the rationale.
Right, Joe.
but this thing doesn't get enough respect. Like it is the most used desktop operating system.
People are probably launching rockets with it.
Yeah, you know, maybe pay some attention to it.
Well, I'm sure.
When you communicate about it with the world. Someone else should look at the post to just make sure it's clear.
Communications are lacking a little bit, but at least not up to your standards. But
what are my standards? English? what do you mean?
I feel like there's got to be PhD, brilliant computer scientists thinking about
they're absolutely
how
are.
Software gets built, delivered in a reliable fashion. How many millions, how many hundreds of millions of lines of code are there? This is an incredibly complex task. They can't just be saying, well, tomorrow let's release that.
Right, right.
I mean, they're not doing that.
No, they're not doing
that. Might feel that way.
This is a company that talks a lot about transparency, and they do a bad job of transparency, I would say, with Windows. And they talk a lot about how great it is. And I don't know. I don't mind. Look, whatever features they've already announced for 20, whatever the next one's going to be called, 20H2, whether or not those features make it into that release is not a concern for me in the slightest. That's not the problem.
Well, it's a concern for them.
Okay. But I mean, is it? Because they don't really, I don't know. I don't feel like there's been any clarity around the rationale behind this testing process.
There is method in their madness. There must be.
There's madness.
There's too many cooks.
If there is, they haven't described it.
Well, no, but that's not, they don't, in their defense, it's not their job to tell you how they're doing things.
No.
Well, I know you want to know, and I know we want to know.
No. I don't mean it like I'm entitled. It's like, look, you have decided, Microsoft, that you're going to test this thing in the public, and you're going to make us part of the process.
Right.
You've established a system where we as testers can determine in the past which version of Windows we were going to test, and now it's something different. And it just gets confused. It's not
that should be communicated. If they're asking you to be an insider and to do this beta testing,
they've done all kinds of A/B testing and screwed up the works that way, which I don't think is fair. Yeah.
Well, but maybe they don't want to. Poison your responses by giving you too much information about what they're doing.
I think if you care about a feature being tied to a set thing that you're testing, you either want to be in slow or release preview ring, right?
Right.
Like you don't want to be in fast ring.
Well, of course.
Okay.
I don't use betas for anything because I don't want to be a guinea pig.
Well, some people do, and I respect.
Congratulations!
No, I mean that. I mean, some people do. They want to be on the leading edge.
They
want to. Those people want to run canary edge, and there'll be crazy things they can do that maybe don't make the product, and that is how that happens.
Yeah.
It's fine.
If you're in the fast ring, you have to be good with uncertainty.
Right.
By the way, possibly my biggest pet peeve of all. I do like certainty.
You shouldn't be in the fast ring. Yeah, because of what your job is, you have to be in the fast ring.
I know.
Yeah. But yeah. Honestly, if you weren't Paul Thurrott, you might just want to be like Leo Laporte and just use the release version.
Yeah, you I want to be really clear about this. I do want to be like Leo Laporte.
Maybe you just want to. Mary Jo, you don't do all that.
I never use insider rings. No.
No.
I don't.
Paul, you're just hurting yourself.
I know.
You have to. I understand. It's your job.
Yeah.
You're writing about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, whatever. I apologize for not suffering in silence.
We don't want you to suffer in silence. We want to hear those cries and moans.
Every article is a cry for help.
I'm hurting inside.
It's my writing process.
Mary Jo and I both rose to your defense in the on the Twit community, but I did call you a doer New Englander.
You did.
Oh.
Yeah. I called you Eeyore.
Okay, so words hurt, and
well, I said very nice things about you, but you have to understand where you know. Paul is like that Vermont guy, you know.
I think I know the thread you're referring to. So that my response to this kind of thing, where like someone says I'm negative or I complain too much, whatever it is like, guys, I love this product and I want it to be as good as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that not complaining when there are problems is somehow the better way to be, then we're going to have to part ways because I always use the example of, you know, my child comes home and gets all D's on his report card. Still love the kid.
Right.
But you know what? You got to do better than this. It's not me. That's not me being negative.
No, you got to withhold
me having
Microsoft's
what I think
allowance.
Is the proper response to a problem.
Yeah.
So that's my attitude about that kind of complaint.
I think that's reasonable. Yeah.
I do too.
Of course, I think it's reasonable. Of course, I do.
Reasonable. I said that what people don't get is you're complaining so much because you care so much.
I care less.
It's just like the same thing in Back to School. It's like that guy really cares about what we'll never know.
I just use Linux. I just say, oh, screw it. I'm going to use Linux.
I just feel like. Yeah, you know, they're not good at this. They're not good at that. And I want Windows to be good because I'm a Windows user, but you're
and you look
way
over
more
me
invested
and I'm like shaking the bars on the window and I can't understand why no one's listening.
At least you don't
I could just go to the cloud if things get bad. Yes. You're sticking in there and hang on with Windows. To the cloud.
And got to point out, this was a banner year for PC sales.
Right.
Things are going pretty good. Macintosh sales dropped.
Macintosh sales dropped.
PC sales were up the most they'd been in like, 8 years, 9 years? A lot.
8 years, yeah. So, I'm sorry. No, they're not up as much as they've been in 8 years. They have risen for the first time in 8 years. So,
oh, wow. There hadn't been any growth for 8 years.
8 years, yeah. We had seven straight years of falling PC sales. So,
wow.
I guess listen, we're grasping at straws here when we're looking for positive news in the PC market. But the last time I got to look at the chart here, but the last time the PC market, why is this not loading? Sold this number of PCs before the peak of the market was 2007, you know, actually they sold more that year. So between 2006
volume or just growth
volume.
Wow.
So
what do you attribute that?
Actually,
Windows
so
7, end of life.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things to this. So if you look at a chart of PC sales over time, the one thing you could put over it would be where different versions of Windows came out and where different versions of Windows expired, right? Because those two things have an impact.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. On sales. They're not the only things. I mean, obviously, you could look at the iPhone. I think the iPhone is the big thing that triggered the downward fall. They moved to mobile. But it's very interesting that, you know, Windows Vista, which is viewed as kind of a disaster, PC sales grew huge between 2006, 2007, 2008. Huge, right when that thing came out. When Windows 7 came out in 2009, that was the peak of the industry. 2010, 2011, and then 2012. Those are the three biggest years ever in the history of the PC.
Wow.
And it's been all downhill ever since. Windows 8, which arrived in the wake of the iPhone, et cetera, et cetera. If you look at the impact that Windows XP expiring in 2014 had on PC sales still fell, but only by a tiny amount. Previously and after that, they fell by a lot. So there was XP's impact. I think what we're seeing this year with the little bump, and it's a very little bump, but is the start of Windows 7's impact, that some portion of the industry that was using Windows 7 is buying a new PC, and that's where we're at. So,
this is the chart up till 2019. This is the last bar on this chart, 2018. It has been a very downhill.
Yeah.
I mean, drastically downhill market.
Yeah, but if you look at 2016 through 2019, it's almost flat.
Yeah.
Right?
Slowed down. But it was. But if you look 2006 through 2011, it was up every year.
Yes, it was straight up. Well, and by the way, if you look at the market before that, it was always going up.
Yeah.
Pretty much, right?
So what happened in 2011 that suddenly it just cratered?
The iPhone.
Mm. Interesting. And iPad came out then?
Yep.
That's when Microsoft panics and says we got to put tablet into Windows.
You can't remember, the iPhone was very limited when it first came out, and I don't just mean capabilities. I mean it was only on AT&T. So one of the things you get between 2008 and 2011, 12, whatever, is the iPhone exploded across the world. Huge growth market, right? A lot of people at that point were saying, well, the things I used to do on the PC, I can do on this beautiful little tiny device now instead. And
do you think now they're realizing it's not true and that's why they're coming back to the
market? No, I think what we're seeing is the natural size of the market for a device that's used solely for productivity. I think this has corrected because the artificial part of the growth before was the PC was the only part of the PC industry.
Right.
It was
there was no choice.
The only way we did this. Yeah.
Mm. And that's changed. The impact. That has really changed.
Yep.
And people are realizing they don't need a computer. They need
250, 260 million units a year is still pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Lenovo. Number two, HP. Then Dell, Mac, Apple, and Acer.
Yes.
So big year for Lenovo, Dell, and HP.
I will say this, by the way. There have been quarters where PC sales have grown before this year. They came very close. Last year was 259 versus 261 million. And you remember, and I still 100% believe this, but Intel last year, remember they had a component shortage and PC makers couldn't ship as many PCs, I guess, as you know, the market could have handled it. I'm not 100% sure I believe it, but it's possible had that not happened that this growth would have happened last year too. And that makes sense because a lot of companies would have been moving off of Windows 7 last year too. It's when not everyone does that at once. This is something that happens over X number of years. So I think this year is going to look a lot like the last few years have looked. I think probably tiny growth or flat or whatever. And then after that, we'll see because this system where there's a new version of Windows and Windows versions are going out, that kind of goes away, doesn't it? Right? We're on Windows 10 now.
Yeah. What do you think about new device types, though? Do you think that'll have any impact on the growth of the market?
No.
Like foldable dual screen. I don't think dual screen. But, I'm not going to say
the
never.
The reason I don't is...
so many foldables at CES, and they all look
janky.
But
what's that going to replace? Right. So a foldable computer, whatever it is going to replace a computer. It's not going to be... Like, in other words, the thing that's crazy, but awesome about the iPhone or an iPad or whatever is... You buy that in addition, a lot of times, like you have to kind of have that. No one's going to replace an iPhone with a folding computer.
Right.
It can't replace that thing that is number one, that is the most important device. So it's going to have to come from somewhere. I think it's just going to be another PC sale.
Out of Sync in our chat room says maybe some of the blame goes to Intel because they've just stagnated for the last 8 years.
Yeah. So, by the way, there's a million conversations. He's right, and you could. There's a lot of stuff we could talk about. I don't think that had Intel done the right thing with mobility a long time ago, that they would have made much of a difference.
No.
But I think it's fair to say that the reason Microsoft went to Qualcomm and we're seeing the Always Connected PC initiative, et cetera, is because of that. And the end game there, I think, is going to be Intel just shows up. I mean, we have Intel-based PCs that get over 20 hours of battery life right now. So
I don't want to give. I want an Intel. Yeah, I don't want to give up Intel performance for some putative all day.
Like, how much do we have to contort the platform to make it run almost as fast as Intel and then get 13 hours of battery life on ARM? I mean, why not just have all the compatibility, all the performance, and then killer battery life too? It's already there. I mean, and it's only going
to
get better.
That Dell XPS 13 is close to that.
Yeah.
With a real processor in it. And a real
A lot of the computers they announced. Now, granted, these are PC maker claims, but a lot of the computers that were announced at CES 20-something.
I'm going to buy that XPS 13. I just think that's really pretty.
It looks nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that one though, Mary Jo, I think is a lot like the Dragonfly in that it's super, like, that's like an 11-inch form factor now. Mm. So it's like 13-inch screen, 11-inch form
factor. But it's got zero bezel. I mean, literally, they just went all the way to the edge.
I don't think I could type on that thing. I don't.
Yeah,
I just think
I know.
That's
tight.
It's is going to be a problem for me going forward. These tiny PCs.
I know. It's all these weird trade-offs, right? Like if you want the really thin and light and portable, it's like how small can you still type comfortably?
It's funny. Zigzag because I got the MacBook and I got the 11-inch MacBook Air, and now everything is 15 again. I went back to 15 across the board.
You did?
Well, pretty much.
You know what though? Think of the volume of a.
But now I want to go back to 13, Mary Jo.
What if you could have it?
What if it could be super thin but bigger? You know, like bigger dimensions.
I like the Spectres for that reason because they were so thin.
Yeah.
And remember our Acer Swift 7? That was so so skinny, but no battery life as a result. You know.
I feel. Unlike Paul, I get no battery life anyway, no matter what I do for some reason. So
it's true.
I don't know. I don't know what I do. I'm not blaming Notepad here, guys, but TweetDeck, I don't know. Something eats my battery alive.
TweetDeck does, I bet you, because it's scrolling. Yeah. It's auto-scrolling.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I never get more than like 6.5, 7 max.
But Mary Jo, that's not bad.
It's not bad, but you know, it's the difference when you're going out having to carry your cord with you or not.
Right.
Like you're like, should I bring my power cord? Do I need to? I don't want to carry it.
I am.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
I don't care what happens with computers. I am so compulsive. I would never not bring the cord. I couldn't even imagine doing that.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't, even though it would probably be fine. Like a day in New York, I'd be on the bus for a couple hours, have whatever the meeting was. A little bit of work. I could never do it.
Is this the old XPS 15 or is this the new? It's the brand new XPS 15. How many hours?
19 hours.
Russell says 19 hours.
It said 19.
Yeah. Oh, it says 19. Well, I don't know if I trust it. this is an i7. It's only 8th gen, so it isn't the new.
Right, but if it is, look, I mean, the most cynical possible view, it's half. Right. So it's 9.5 hours of battery life. That's still
really
incredible.
Yeah, I mean, where are you going, Mary Jo, that you need that much? I mean, you go to a press conference, that's over in a few hours, right?
Yeah, but you just, I have in the back of my mind the worry, like, what if something breaks and I've got like, you know, 10 seconds of battery life left?
Because you have to file. You're on deadline.
Right.
You have to have access to that.
Yeah. I always think, like, what, should I go to a computer store and just, like, use one of their machines on the floor?
To other cities and have had people that, you know, do jobs like we do show up and say, hey, does anyone have a power adapter for whatever the thing is? And it's like, dude, seriously, like, you just flew across the country without a power adapter for your
bring
computer?
It?
It's going to be so much better when everything's
I would have flown
C.
home to get it.
Everything's going to be type C. I think it almost already is.
Yeah, that'll be.
Every hotel you go to. People leave their power adapters as long as we're, you know, they're all type C.
Well, everyone will have the same adapter that actually works out.
Yeah.
That's why the EU is trying to standardize power tips.
Because I hated it when everything, it wasn't, you know, now phones, thanks to the EU, phones are pretty much standardized. But for a long time, phones weren't. And laptops have only recently become standardized. I still get with my Lenovo, their weird power brick.
I still some of those it depends. It's because of the machine, the processor type. They might need
more than
power.
100 watts. Yeah, Type C only does 100 watts.
Yep.
I don't like.
I bet the next iPhone, Apple will absolutely go USB-C at some point.
They will absolutely. They have to. They've already done it with the iPad Pro. They're already in process.
Yeah.
Microsoft is phasing out its Microsoft stores. What?
Okay. So let me give a lot of caveats before I talk about this story. So I have got from my sources tips saying that Microsoft's going to get rid of at least two of their digital app stores. One is the Windows 10 store for business. One is the Windows 10 store for education. So these are specialized stores that Microsoft introduced around 2015 or so for companies and universities to curate their apps and manage their apps through a private store, right?
Okay.
But, you know, we're saying, oh, yeah, like somebody said to me on Twitter, I didn't even know they had a store for business. Yeah, well, if you ask business users, they all know they have a store for business and they all use it. okay. So it's a pretty big deal. And the reason I'm like downplaying the story a little bit is we kind of knew this might happen. Last year at Build, when I talked to Kevin Gallo, he was already talking about Microsoft's position is you don't have to buy apps through our store. Like those days are gone on Windows 10 where everything has to go through the store. And we're working on ways that people will be able to get trusted, signed apps not going through the store. And he didn't have any more to say at that point. But it sounds like they have made a decision that one thing they're going to do is kill the store for business and store for education. I don't know about the regular client store that's built into Windows 10. I would guess that might go away too, but I don't know that for a fact. And I've had a lot of people question me on this, like, well, how come we don't know this? We're enterprises. We're a big Microsoft partner, blah, blah, blah. They haven't told anybody yet. That's why you don't know. But they know inside is what I hear.
Mary and Jo knows.
I heard this from, and you know what? I wouldn't go out with this unless I felt really strongly that I had it solidly. So I'm not just like, I've had people say, show me your sources. I'm like, guys, do you know how this works? This is not how that works.
Well, why would they do that? What's the, I mean, I don't. If people
why would they get rid
this,
of it?
Yeah, why get rid of it?
They're trying to clean up their application story, right? So right now, here's their story, which is very messy. We have this store that's built into Windows 10, and we have a store for business and a store for education. All of these give you a way to get apps from third parties and Microsoft in a trusted manner.
Yeah.
But you know what? Now, going forward, we don't really care if you use our store or not. Like, we're going to have other ways you can get apps, like Office, for example, not in the store, right?
Yeah, but you know, they need I know a lot of people download apps from the web or whatever, right? But they need some
store is curation.
Something that says this curation. Is, you know, pa-ching, this is known to be safe, you know.
They need a management and a trust type situation. Yeah. That's what everybody's saying, like what are they going to use for trust, making sure we're getting trusted apps we can manage centrally, right? That's the part I don't know. I don't know what replaces this, and I don't know how much they know. At this point, what replaces it?
And, you know, we do this too much maybe, but Build is obviously the logical time to reveal something like that. Because
I would think so.
This is a concern for developers of apps.
When's Build?
Mid-May or mid to late May, I think.
Okay. Yeah, May. Yep. Right. Well, and so Microsoft's fiscal year ends June 30th, and that's the time I hear they have to make a decision and tell people by that point. Because if you're right now, they're just letting people keep using the store and telling people, use the store. But if that's not going to be your strategy going forward, you have to have a date by which you tell customers, like, by the way, we're not doing that anymore, right? Like, stop using the store.
Hmm.
But you need a plan. You need to tell them, okay, don't use the store, but use this. And that's the part we don't know yet, is what is the this in the equation? Yeah. So I'd say don't panic. They've got to have something replacing it. The problem is we just don't know what it is yet. Hopefully they do, but
So a couple of years ago, Apple introduced the walkie-talkie feature to the Apple Watch. And I was all excited about it for about 5 minutes.
The Dick Tracy feature?
Yeah. Then I used it for a while with my wife, and we found it so annoying, we've never used it since.
You know what's even more annoying is when you're sitting somewhere and the guy next to you starts using it.
Yeah, it's impolite. It's loud.
Yeah.
It's like those old Nextel phones. Joe, you got any 4-inch lug nuts in there?
Exactly. Why are we making calls like we're in World War II?
Right.
Over. Roger. What's your vector, Victor? So apparently, walkie-talkie is coming to Teams.
Right.
That's so gonna be nice.
This makes more sense than it sounds like, right?
Right.
So,
do you need an Apple Watch?
If you're a first-line worker, you know, somebody without a desk, you're on a shop floor, you're filling orders, or you're like at Burger King working in the front, do you have time to like go on your Teams thing to make a call? Hi, blah, blah, blah. No, you just want to push to talk, right? if you're talking to your colleague in the back room and you're using Teams to communicate back and forth over a short channel, that's who they're targeting with this thing. And I understand everybody who uses Teams is freaking out. They're like, oh yeah, this is awesome. Can't wait till my colleagues start using this.
Right? Leo, have you done the commercial in Windows Weekly yet?
Yeah. So I think it's geared towards those people. And as I said to somebody on Twitter, hopefully there's a way to shut it off or to keep it from usable.
I'm sure you can say, I will not be walkie-talkied.
Exactly. Yeah. Little circle with a walkie-talkie.
But yeah, it's certain circumstances, I guess. But forgive me, we don't use Teams. You have it on the phone, so that would be where you would use it, right? Not on your desktop.
No, you can open your laptop, run Teams.
No, on phones.
phones. Okay.
Yeah. Push to talk on a phone.
I notice Slack does not have this feature. So this is, interesting. You need differentiators.
See, and you thought it was just a Slack clone, guys.
It's not. It's much more.
They can innovate.
So much more. Courage.
Can't innovate my
courage.
Mm. Yeah, they announced it this week because it's the big NRF show in New York this week, National Retail Federation. So this is where they show off all their like e-commerce and retail products and services. And this is where they talk about first-line worker features in things like Outlook and Teams. Right. That's why it happened this week.
I can, for certain groups, this would obviously be useful. Yeah.
Right. Not for us, hopefully. Hopefully it can be shut off.
Now, we all saw the news story a couple of days ago about Microsoft now joining the elite group of tech companies that are using humans to listen in on your voice calls.
Well, everyone's doing it, Leo.
Everyone. Starting with Google, then Apple, then Amazon. And eventually all of those three anyway, gave you ways to say, no, I don't want to be monitored or delete all these recordings. So now we just found out that Skype has been doing that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a big news story last year with some other companies, and it was an issue apparently at Microsoft as well. I suspect what happened was when all that public publicizing of this occurred, Microsoft was like, we're not doing that, are we? Oh, we are?
Mm-hmm. Oh, crap.
Yeah. So they don't do that anymore. Okay. But yeah.
It was really egregious because they were just like letting people go home with the recordings.
People in China too, which is like, yikes. Yeah.
But that's how, I wasn't surprised when these first spate of stories came out because I understood that's how you get it better.
Even Apple was doing it. Apple actually suspended this program for a little while so they could figure out a way to do it in a more secure, private fashion. But
they all give you, Apple now gives you the option to say no. Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. And is that what Microsoft's going to do with Skype, or what? Or how is this going to be changed?
They have not commented on this, to my knowledge.
They did this with Cortana,
That's not true. Actually, they did comment on it. But they didn't. I don't believe they addressed that. Let me look at it. I don't believe they addressed that part of it.
Microsoft needs to understand, if you have a voice assistant, the only way the voice assistant can get better is if somebody looks at what it heard and what it did and trains it a little bit. So this is what you'd expect.
So they don't have an explicit response to whether or not they're going to give customers a switch or whatever. But they do say we'll continue to take steps to give customer greater transparency and control over how we manage the data. So they're moving in that direction.
It's happening. It started with GDPR, and now because of the new California Consumer Privacy Act, which just went into effect January 1st.
This should just
1st.
Be GDPR everywhere, because God knows the web browser stuff is awesome.
Yeah. the cookie thing is so stupid. It's just not. Terrible. Did not work.
I feel like that is.
How many millions of hours are lost? It's only a few seconds each time, but it happens every time.
No, but you have to keep telling the same site again and again.
You're not supposed to have to do that. Oh,
yeah, it's crazy.
Because they didn't set the cookie.
Right, they just exit out, right? Yeah.
That's why we have cookies, kids.
Although, apparently, we're going to lose cookies. So
Google says no more third-party cookies.
Third-party cookies.
They're going to dump third-party cookies in Chrome, which is great news. It's one of the pieces of advice Steve Gibson gives everybody. I tell everybody, go into your browser and turn off third-party cookies, because those are the cookies that can track you.
Right. So, I mean, All this says to me is that Google's figuring out
they've got a better way to track you. Oh yeah. They can only turn it off because they got something you don't know about. It's even an even better way.
It's hard not to be cynical.
I hadn't heard this story, but I'm gonna assume that it's a big one. Why didn't Microsoft bid more to get Bing in European?
Well, actually,
search? This is the search ballot you're talking about.
Yeah. So obviously, Google was found guilty of abusing antitrust law in the EU, right? And so, with regards to the web browser and the search functionality in Android in the EU, they're going to provide these screens like we did in Windows 10, 15 years ago, whatever
browser,
that was.
The browser ballot.
Give users a choice. But instead of just picking the top five and listing them randomly, Google allowed these companies that make search engines to bid to be on the screen.
Oh.
So, and it was like a secret bidding. No one could see the bids, so you never know what any other companies are doing. Mm-hmm. So DuckDuckGo apparently paid a lot of money because they're pretty much at the top or near the top of every list. And Bing only came out ahead in the UK, I think solely because of Tom Warren. But I don't – but this suggests – because of the system, which by the way I think violates the point of the – like the point of the EU thing was, you know, you need – this needs to be fair. And so the what they did was it made it into a paid contest. But it suggests that Microsoft either didn't bid almost at all or bid very low amounts in most places because they came in dead last everywhere except for the UK where they came in first.
Can I make a guess on why they might not have? Because the browser ballot failed and didn't work at all when they were using it before in the EU, the browser choice ballot.
So they don't know.
So maybe they're like, this didn't work for us before, so why should we waste money buying it now?
I mean, the net result here, I would guess, is going to be that most people that use Android are probably just going to choose Google search.
Right.
Even if they choose a non-Google browser, like I use the new Edge. I recommend it. I actually do use Google search.
Me too. Same.
But regardless of my opinions or whatever, I mean, I could picture most people, I would imagine most people using Android are going to choose Chrome and Google search.
Yeah.
You know.
By the way, in the new Edge, it's kind of hard to find the browser.
Oh, yes, it is. That's choice, a good tip, right? By the way. It is very hard to find. And you know that's on purpose. You know that's on purpose.
It took me like a couple times, like of several minutes. Yep. I'm like, where is that again? Where you can
pick the only reason I remember this is because I install Windows on bring up Windows new on so many different computers because I've repeated it so many times.
Yeah.
But it is very well hidden.
So maybe people don't know why this is so important to companies. We have a little hint of this in the story from last year that Google paid Apple $12 billion dollars to be the default search in Safari. You can still change it, but the tyranny of the default is whatever's the default most people will use, and it's worth that much money. Mozilla is free because they make so much money in Google referral fees, and I'm sure Bing pays them too. Because if you use that search engine, you're going to see ads on that search engine, and they make money and they pass it along. And it's a lot.
By the way, to Mary Jo's point, if you do want to change Edge search,
we should tell people how to do that.
Yeah, it's settings, privacy, and services. You scroll all the way to the bottom, and there's a really obvious choice called address bar. And when you click on that, then you can change the search.
Oh, interesting.
It takes you to a whole different screen. Like it's not even on the screen, right?
Yep.
Wow.
Oh yeah, no, it's very purposefully. Well,
but that's why they don't want you to change. They make money on you using Bing.
Yep.
They don't want you to not use Bing.
Yeah.
It's not like out of pride because we love Bing and they make money on it.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, breaking news: Mozilla lays off 70. Yikes!
Oh boy, that's not good. That's because you keep using Bing, folks.
That's it. That's why
Stop
everybody.
It. That's a surprise.
Blame it on Cridge.
I saw numbers at one point. It was hundreds of millions of dollars that Mozilla made every year from Google. That's probably more a testament to how successful Chrome has become, right?
Yeah.
I like Firefox. I think it's a great browser, but
I would use Firefox, except they're the one major browser that doesn't let you pin apps to the taskbar. Like, I wish they would figure that out.
Well, they fired the guy that was going to do that, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, I don't know.
That's over now.
You want to do a little Xbox, Paul, and then Mary Jo can get a beer and...
No, we don't really have too much here, but the big thing is that... people who watch or listen to the show probably remember the controversy around Microsoft's evolving strategy with Xbox and the fact that they don't have a device-specific exclusive. In other words, if you buy like an Xbox One X, there are no games that only work on that one console, or there are no games from Microsoft that only work. Well, there were no new games from Microsoft or Microsoft Studios that only worked on Xbox One consoles, right? Their theory is that we have an Xbox platform. It runs on multiple device types. You should be able to get those things on the PC. And then as this evolves into a service, you should be able to get it on any device you want to play this on, whether it's through Xbox Game Pass today, which is console and PC, or xCloud, which is, you know, multi-device in the future. A lot of people in the gaming, maybe not in the industry, but people who are gamers, gaming enthusiasts or whatever, have a real problem with this for some reason, and I don't quite understand it. So, you know, the Sony PlayStation 5 is going to launch with exclusives. There are going to be games that you have to buy that particular console to play them. And Microsoft has said, we're not doing that. And, you know, if you want to write a really terrible headline and make Microsoft look bad, you could write one that says something to the tune of, Microsoft will have no exclusives for their new console when it launches this year now, which is... not really accurate. The point of, you know, I think that Microsoft's strategy is gamer centric and gamer friendly and is the right thing to do within the concept of we're going to have exclusives. Like, there are games like Halo that we're not going to port to the PlayStation because that's the way this, you know, industry works, unfortunately. But, you know, going forward, you buy a new Halo game, you should be able to play it on anything. It should be on the console. It should be on the PC. It should be on xCloud, meaning you can play it wherever you want, on your TV, on your phone, you know, whatever. So I choose to see this one glass half full. See, I can be positive.
Look at you.
It happens. Yeah, it happens. Speaking of glass half full, I will also point out that I think Eric Sweeney is a nut job. Yeah. But
Tim Sweeney. Eric?
Tim Sweeney, Tim. I'm sorry. Yep, yeah, Tim Sweeney. I dislike him so much, I don't even care what his real name is. he's a weirdo, but... He's
a very wealthy weirdo.
He is a very wealthy. He's also actually quietly giving back a lot to the area of the country he lives in, which is, I think, North Carolina. But anyway, he's a little bit of a crank. But if you're a PC gamer, you really need to be looking at the Epic Game Store. It's incredible. And
I know. You know what? That's funny because I, of course, Fortnite. But I put Untitled Goose Game was also Epic. Yep. And so I had to put get pop-ups all the time pushing games from this Epic Game Store.
Oh,
like
that's
Steam.
So they're spamming you from other places.
Yeah, okay. Like Steam, it starts up when you start up your computer. And most gamers will have Steam and Epic and maybe some other stuff running, like the good old games loader. And I actually don't like that. I just want to play one game. I don't want to have to keep a background process going all the time.
Okay, that's fair. I think the thing that they've – well, the reason I –
it works.
Reason I think people should leave – sorry.
It works. Your story is they have 108 million customers.
Yeah, well, but the real story – yes, they do. But I think the benefit to it, the reason I would recommend people at least look at it is they give away free games all the time.
Yeah, that's how they get
you. Yeah, I know. It is how they get you. They're going to keep doing it through 2020. So – you know, for example, just to give you an idea of why this is such a big deal, if you are an Xbox Live Gold member, you can take advantage of games with gold. In fact, I'll mention some games with gold stuff in the tips later. The problem is if you decide later on you're going to exit that program and not do it anymore, you can't access all those free games you got. Like, they're not actually yours. They're yours as part of your subscription. That's why it's called Games with Gold. These games that you get from the Epic Game Store are yours forever. And so if you decide, I'm never going to buy another game from these guys again, I don't want to do this anymore, you still own those games. Now, as you said, you may have to have the app running in the background or whatever, but...
I mean, you could say don't start up, but you have to start it if you want to play any of the games.
Yeah. I like I said, I have a hard time with this guy. it's a nice store. And you know, he takes great exception to the percentage that other stores take from the total cost of something like Apple established the 30%. So he has much more favorable terms for third-party developers.
We have other ways of making money, says Tim Sweeney. he's mastered the incremental
income.
He is
an insane madman.
Yes, he is.
he's like the guy in Daniel Suarez's demon book. He's like the, or Ready Player One, kind of the crazed genius.
Yes, like the game maker guy. That's like kind of the, okay, that's...
Don't you think?
Those characters could both be modeled after him, actually.
Or Carmack,
Or a little both, No, they've done very well. And you know what? When you get great titles like Fortnite and Epic or Untitled Goose Game, people are going to, it's going to work.
Yeah. You know, the big difference between him and John Carmack is that he's obviously, you know, he's insane. He's obviously a good businessman as well.
Yes.
Like Carmack was just a tech genius. Like that's, and he just lives and breathes, and that's his whole thing. He didn't know anything about business, didn't care. He would give stuff away too. Like he would give away his game engines and, you know, open source things. I mean, he was just, you know,
he open sourced Doom. It was awesome.
Yeah. Yep.
Sweeney made, as I remember last year, 2018, $7 billion from Fortnite alone.
By the way,
that guy,
that game's free.
One guy on a free game,
you know? So when you talk about, you know, making money other ways, you know, we'll figure it out. He figured it out.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, it helps when you're selling the digital version of crack. You know? Yeah.
And your customers are teenage boys.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
They worry about fruit-flavored vape pens.
Not above taking mom's credit card. Yeah. And
let's take a break. When we come back, the back of the book, we've got tips. We've got beer. We've got all the things that matter in life. An app pick, an enterprise pick, even a code name. A good code name this week. I like it.
Yeah.
But first, a word from our sponsor. This portion of Windows Weekly is brought to you quite literally by Cashfly. In fact, all our shows are brought to you by Cashfly. Cashfly is our CDN, our content delivery network. And I don't know, you know, if you remember the early days of Twit, when I was struggling with how to get the, you know, files to people. Initially, it was just a browser download, right? But, you know, once you cross a certain number of downloads, that starts to really become untenable. Then I started using BitTorrent. We were begging people, would you please seed the show so that everybody can get it? Which was nice. It's a nice community. But I was thrilled when Matt Levine came along. He's the founder of Cashfly and said, Leo, we got a CDN. Can we help? And I've been using Cashfly ever since. That's almost, I don't know, what, 14 years, 13 years? A long, long time. We literally deliver petabytes of podcasts every single month with never a hiccup. In fact, I don't, you probably don't notice it, right? But that's actually a good thing, right? You just, the podcast appears on your device and it's just there. But every once in a while, somebody say, wow, you know, I compare how fast I get your podcast to other ones. It's so much faster. That's because of Cashfly. Cashfly has servers all over the world. A CDN works by putting you know, you download the file from the server that's closest to you. So when we put the file up on Cashfly, Cashfly propagates it to all the servers, and then you get it from the ones closest to you. That's one of the reasons they're so fast. It's also one of the reasons they have a 100% SLA. Not 5.969s, it's 100%. That means you're going to get the best experience for all of your customers if you deliver podcast data of any kind, apps. Cashfly is the way to go. 10 times faster than traditional delivery methods. We learned that right away. But it's even 30 times faster than other CDNs. They really run it right. And Microsoft uses Cashfly. LG uses Cashfly. Adobe uses Cashfly. Ars Technica. And, of course, we've been using it forever. Say goodbye to checking every few days to see if you've gone over your limit. Cashfly does a very smart thing. In fact, they could do this for you. They did it for us, where they look at yearly usage, because we're very spiky. In fact, pretty much always with CDNs, that, you know, it's like you spike up and then it's quiet for a while and you spike up again. You don't want a CDN that's going to bill you for those spikes. You want to build across the entire year so you don't ever have to worry about, you know, using too much bandwidth or going over any limits. That's how Cashfly works. And that's why people save up to 20% on other CD over other CDNs when they go to Cashfly. You can find out if you are overpaying by going to twit.cashfly.com. There I'll give away a no-pressure complimentary analysis of your existing CDN bill and of your usage trends and see if they can help. Trust me, they made such a difference for us. This is worth your time. Twit.cashfly.com. They're great people, too. Twit.cashfly.com. Thank you, Cashfly, for delivering all of our great content in a timely fashion. No 3 a.m. phone calls. The CDN's down. It's always up. The roads must roll. The podcasts must flow. And Cashfly gets it done for us. Thank you, Cashfly. Now it's time for a tip of the week with Mr. Paul Thurrott.
Yeah. This one's going to be a little hard to describe. But for those who would like to continue running the legacy version of Edge with the new version, Microsoft has provided businesses with a group policy they can implement. But as many people probably know, those things are all – they all basically make changes to the registry. So if you're running like a home version of Windows 10 or you just want to – you can use a registry script or manually make changes to the registry to achieve the same thing. So – Microsoft has actually documented this. There's a registry key that is /hkeylocalmachine/software/policies.
Oh,
slash easy. Microsoft.
Easy peasy.
/edge update, yes. You need a value called allow SXS, which is side by side, SXS. And
magic.
It's a D word.
Magic. Yeah. It's a D word.
It's a reg D word. Yeah. Anyway, this will
you
be in the
be
show
a
notes.
Real nerd
the link
to know
it.
What that is.
Yeah, the other thing D-word. You can search for is the Microsoft Edge update policies is the page on docs.microsoft.com that describes nice. This. It's not there's no one listening to this that could possibly just duplicate what I did, but
type that carefully,
you
kids.
You
don't
yes.
want to get
so
it
that
wrong.
Will it will unhide Edge. So
yeah, that's good
if you want to do that. Okay. More obviously, I just mentioned Xbox Games with Gold. At the first show of the year, we talked about some of the games that were coming in the beginning of the month. Now that it's the 15th, the other two games are available. And these are the good ones this month. So Batman, the Telltale series, which is pretty great, and Lego Star Wars 2, which I understand is pretty great. I've never actually played that one, are both available if you are in that program.
It's not as bloody as Call of Duty, but it's...
We're never going to see that.
So, Mike,
that would be the greatest day of my life.
Are you getting Mike all into this Windows thing now? He was here last week filling in for me. Is he all into this in his
Elvis? He's only here for the cocktails.
He's polite about the Windows stuff.
Some of this game, I want to see him get an Xbox.
Yeah. He likes Elvis. He likes his Elvis
is
a lot.
Beautiful. Yep. That's his Surface laptop with the blue suede Alcantara.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is actually quite beautiful.
Yeah, that's a nice machine.
Yeah. All right, there's your tip of the week. You got an application of the week, Mr. T?
Yeah, so most people listening probably are aware that Microsoft makes a launcher for Android, which is inventively titled Microsoft Launcher. It's pretty great. But this week they launched a new version of it in the Google Play Store that is called the Microsoft Launcher Preview, and it's a way for Microsoft to test features that are coming in a future version of the launcher. And I think the key here is this is almost certainly the version of the launcher that we're going to see on the Surface Duo. So, for example, one of the new features is landscape mode. Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting because that's the first step when you think about it to a home screen that spans two vertical screens because it kind of looks landscape. Mm-hmm. And I think this is going to be where they test some of the stuff we're going to see eventually on that device. So the other big change, the other big new feature is native support for dark mode is available in this one as well.
Ooh.
So I actually installed this. It's not feature complete. Like it doesn't have all the stuff from the original, the normal version of Microsoft Launcher. But I think this is where, because again, I keep testing things and getting mad that nothing works. everything I run has to be pre-release software, apparently. But I actually think this thing looks pretty great. Like this is a nice looking launcher.
Is this the? Do you have to get a special beta version, or if you're using Microsoft
Launcher?
Yeah,
you have to get the preview version.
Okay.
So the way this worked for me too, if you go to the Google Play Store listing and you click install, it actually says something like this may take a couple of minutes because they have to kind of I guess they register you into a beta or something when you do it. So when I installed this, it said it was installed, but nothing ever appeared. Like it didn't. It didn't just appear, but when I came back later, I went into settings and you could change the launcher and it did change it and the app was there. So it took a little while in my case for it to pop up. but it did.
I have to try. I tried it, the old one, but I'll have to try it.
I know. I'm on the fence about launcher. I just don't use launchers that much, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I completely understand just not wanting to screw with this kind of thing.
Right.
But the reason this is more for me, it's more like a view at what Microsoft is doing in mobile these days. Because when this thing first came out, one of the big criticisms was that it wasn't Windows Phone for Android. I think a lot of people were expecting live tiles and stuff like that. And
this
to me is I hope we've gotten past that. But I feel like this is a more modern look at where Microsoft is with mobile UX and so forth.
Yeah.
And again, like this, it's always been pretty good. Like I guess not the UX, but the look and feel or whatever of this new version, I just think it's pretty.
Yeah.
Like it looks really nice.
I might try it.
My big complaint, and this is probably not Microsoft's fault, is that you can't import your home screens.
Yeah.
So if you have to manually recreate all the icons, you know, it's like give you like a list, like tell us which ones are your most, you know, your favorite apps or whatever. But really what I want is could you import the icons from each screen? Like that would be nice.
Cliff Esports said when you first said Microsoft Launcher, he thought you said Microsoft Lawn Chair.
Actually,
like Microsoft Lawn Chair.
Ironically, there is an Android launcher called Lawn Chair. It's very popular.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. That's funny. I'm not recommending that one, although it's probably pretty good.
Time for Mary Jo Foley's Enterprise Pick of the Week.
My Enterprise pick is a warning.
Uh-oh.
Warning.
Danger.
If you're an IT admin and your people and your company use the Power Platform, you know, Power Apps, Power Automate, which is the new name for Flow, and Power BI. As of this week, unless you took action, your users are going to be able to start just buying and installing any of these things without your approval.
What?
Remember last year, Microsoft tried to sneak this in. They tried to make these Power Platform self-service licensing changes. And so many people cried out about this that they said, okay, we're going to push the date back and we're going to give admins a way to block this using PowerShell. So if you weren't somebody who blocked this using PowerShell and you are going to be concerned if your users start doing this, you should go back and look at the, when was this? October 31. Look for the October 31 post about how you can block this. If you're a company that doesn't care and you're like, hey, we want our users to take proactive action and build some Power Apps and build some flows, then don't worry about it. But if you want to have central control and make sure, you know, that they're not going to come and bill you for things that they built that you didn't know about and such, you might want to check that out.
Hmm. You might.
Yes.
Codename pick of the week.
This is a codename from a friend who listens to Windows Weekly. The friend said, there's a codename that's used inside Microsoft that is Vader.
I love it. And is it dark mode?
It's not dark mode.
Nice.
It actually, I believe, has to do with Windows Virtual Desktop. And so Windows Virtual Desktop is already out and shipping and people can buy it today. But because it's tied in with each new version of Windows that revs, Microsoft has to test it internally. So I think Vader is the version of Windows Virtual Desktop that is tied to the next version of Windows. So it might be 20H2. I asked him, is there a Darth? But I didn't get an answer.
How about a Kylo Ren?
What about the other Sith Lords?
Yeah. Where's Palpatine?
I know. We can have a whole theme here. If you guys want to share more of those code names, we're all ears here.
Vader is a great code name. You got to think every Silicon Valley company has a code name Vader somewhere in there.
Just have like machines on their network that are all like planets from Star Wars or something.
Oh, we're going to meet in Tatooine 3 today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's do some beer. I missed the beer.
You did? Okay. Yes. I'm doing this because I've gotten a lot of listener requests for some good low-alcohol, non-alcohol beers.
Okay.
And the reason I haven't done a lot of these is there aren't many of them. Most of them are terrible. But there's a new company in Connecticut, Stratford, Connecticut, to be precise, called Athletic Brewing. And they've made a couple of very low alcohol beers. They try to advertise them as for people who, you know, you might be out running, and when you finish running, you want to drink a beer, but you don't want to drink like a 14% beer.
Beer while you're running.
Yeah, yeah. And so they're making these kinds of really low, like meaning 0.4% alcohol beers.
What's the point?
The one I picked because it tastes like beer and it has flavor and it has hops in it. So this one that I picked is called Upside Down Golden Ale. It's available in cans in New York. I've seen it all around. And people, I haven't yet tried it. I bought a can, but I haven't tried it yet. People who have tried it say, wow, this actually tastes like beer and not water. It's actually drinkable and good and worth drinking. So they make another one. I think it's an IPA, but I expect they're going to make a lot of different styles. So watch for Athletic Brewing. Huh. And if you want to try the Golden Ale, it's called Upside Down.
Huh. I need this in scotch and wine.
You know, Michael Nita has some good low-carb beers.
Yeah.
I don't know if that also means low alcohol. Probably related.
I think they tend to be, right?
Yeah. There's a three carb beer that's something like this Upside Dawn. It's called Daytime or something like that. Yeah. I guess I always have it for lunch.
Right. Something light aren't like it's wrecked after
day
one.
Yeah. Well, that's it for this edition of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Mary Jo Foley's at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Just ask the next time you're at CompUSA. They'll be glad to pull that right up on the screen.
I'll spring up behind the books and say, actually, sir, Windows 98 is more compatible than Windows 95.
That's Paul Thurrott. He is at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. His books are at leanpub.com, and together they form the dynamic duo that brings you Windows Weekly each and every week, and I'm so glad that they do. We do Windows Weekly Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC. If you want to watch live, you can. Just go to twit.tv/live. Actually, there's live audio and video, so you can listen or watch live. After the fact, all the shows that are on our website, twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/ww. And there are a lot of great shows there, so don't just stop with Windows Weekly. Take a look at all the different offerings.
I mean, start with Windows Weekly.
Start with Windows Weekly, but don't stop with Windows Weekly. You can also go to YouTube and watch everything we do, and that's youtube.com/twit for the master channel, and each show has its own sub-channel. And, of course, the best thing to do is to search for Twit in your podcast app and subscribe to a bunch of them. You know, just get them all. Just subscribe. That way you'll always have something great to listen to on your phone. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Great to see you
again. Welcome back again.
Thank you. I miss you. And I'm glad to be back. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.